Catherine Wagner is a poet and a mother. Finding time for both motherhood and her artistic life was challenging, but she found support on the internet, in the virtual company of other poets and mothers. With co-editor Rebecca Wolf, Wagner is the editor of the anthology Not For Mothers Only. She told Steve Paulson that she was interested in exploring motherhood as it really is, with all its ambivalences.
There just aren't that many poems about motherhood out there. And there are, I should say, some anthologies of mother poems, but they don't tend to be necessarily by mothers. They might be about mothers. And they tend to be a little bit sentimental, in my view, in their focus. They all have the word celebration in their titles, you know, a celebration of mothers and daughters, something like that. And, you know, I think there are certainly things to celebrate, but sometimes celebration can be a way of, sometimes the way that we think about motherhood and the sort of stereotypical normative ways are really ways to encourage mothers to continue to self-sacrifice, to hide their anger, to maybe not speak. So I wanted to have an anthology that wasn't not a celebration exactly, but that definitely pushed against motherhood stereotypes and allowed mothers to speak and express a range of experience.
So what you wanted to do, you and your co-editors, you wanted to put together a collection of poetry about mothers, but from all different perspectives. And it's not always pretty. I mean, there are a lot of ambivalences about being a mother. Could you read one poem that illustrates those mixed feelings?
Sure. This one is by Thylias Moss. It's called Gossamer and Thinner, and it's a poem about nursing. The breast milk is so thin, it turns gossamer, and a dragonfly flies away with it all. Thin, like always on the verge of running out, always the glorious last drop. Cows and goats don't cry as much, flies away with it all. Breast milk be pulled from me in ribbons, and baby be wrapped up in this, and it's hallelujah for the gift, and even hallelujah wears thin, if it's hallelujah this and that, and everything don't need to be praised. Everything don't need no deep search for good, and some of it pulls more than milk from the breast, the last drop of hospitality, the thin wires of nerves, and that's a good boy, and daddy's a little man, and something going on is thin, cold, and Python can love a man to death. I can't do that to a baby. There's this pretty scary thing at the end of that poem where it's about the possibility of killing the child, wanting to get rid of the child, wanting to hurt the child, but of course simultaneously not wanting to, having this huge love for the child. And a lot of mothers have this feeling. It comes up a lot in these poems, actually, and it is shocking. But I think that it's an important thing, you know, not to act on, obviously, but for us to recognize and think through the fact that, you know, when Susan Smith drove her children into the pond, she wasn't that far off from feelings that pretty much every mother has at one point or another if she's willing to acknowledge them.
Well, there's another issue that comes up in a number of these poems, the problem of time. I mean, especially women who've been poets, who've been writers, and how do you do that? And care for a child at the same time. There are only so many hours to go around in the day.
Yeah. Something's always getting sort of pushed off the cliff so that you can do something else, it seems like. My co-editor says, you know, when people ask her, you know, how has being a mom affected your writing? She just says, my poems are shorter now. You know, I think that's probably true for a lot of people. There is some kind of, you know, you have to change your process in some way. But I think it ends up being pretty productive for a lot of mothers. Something that I wanted to foreground by making this anthology was that it's possible to be creative as a mother. You know, you don't have to give everything up, and it's important to maintain those parts of yourself. They're a way of understanding what's going on, for one thing.
I'm wondering if you could read one of the poems in your anthology called Time Problem.
Oh, sure. Yeah. It's long, so I'll read part of it. Brenda Hillman is, I didn't say anything about Thylias Moss, by the way, but she's a poet who lives in Michigan, and her sons are, let's see, I wanted to give a little bio about them, but she's got two sons. And Brenda Hillman lives in California, and she's got a grown daughter who's 28 named Louisa. This is about when Louisa was younger. Time problem. The problem of time, of there not being enough of it. My girl came to the study and said, help me. I told her I had a time problem, which meant I would die for you, but I don't have 10 minutes. Numbers hung in the math book like motel coat hangers. The lean cuisine was burning like an ancient city, black at the edges, bubbly earth tones in the center. The latest thing they're saying is lack of time might be a woman's problem. She sat there with her math book sobbing. It turned out to be prime factoring, whole numbers dangle in little nooses. Hawking says if you back up far enough, it's not even an issue. Time falls away into the curve, which is finite, boundaryless. Appointment book, soprano telephone, beep and beep went the microwave. The hands fell off my watch, fell off in the night. No time to get the watch fixed, so the blank face lived for months in my dresser. No arrows for hands, just quartz intentions, just the Pinocchio nose before the lie, left in the center. The watch didn't have 20 minutes. Neither did I.
There are also poems by women who have chosen not to be mothers, who talk about the agonizing decision that that was. And you've included, for instance, one by Molly Peacock.
Yeah, on the street. A curette has the shape of a grapefruit spoon. They dilate the cervix, then clean out the womb with the jagged prow, just like separating the grapefruit from its skin, although the softening yellow rind won't bear another fruit and this womb will? Well, this womb can, if two will. Oh, I am sick of will and all unconscious life. I am sick of the fall and the history of human emotion. Who knows the end of our commotion, except God, the novelist? Once my heart leapt straight from its socket, say beating, change your fate. Yet I found, in order to live, my heart had to beat back in its own pocket. The start of change ending by continuing living with wet possibility lingering like a light rain glazing our separate apartment buildings now where, unpregnant, unmarried, and with no one to worry over us in our old age as we were sure this never-born child would, we don our raincoats and goofily smile under our umbrellas, unceasingly happy to see each other when we meet on the street.
Now, hasn't Molly Peacock actually talked about how she didn't feel she could be both a poet and a mother?
Yeah, and there are other women who've felt the same. It was actually surprising putting this anthology together to realize how many women there were out there who had children, lots of women that I didn't realize had children. And, you know, I think a lot of people have the sense that it's impossible to make the choice to have children and also to maintain yourself as a writer. And I think a lot of people feel that way about having children with any career they might take on. You know, it is super hard. The culture is against you. You know, there are lots of jobs where there isn't any parental leave possible. This country isn't very good for that sort of thing. It's not possible to nurse your child in many workplaces. It's difficult to take time off. It's even difficult to announce that you're pregnant. You know, when I was on the job market for university jobs, and I've heard this from other women, it's, you know, if they see you're pregnant, they're probably not going to offer you the job. They might not voice it as a bigotry, but they might well.
Now, some of these poems also get into the experience of childbirth, obviously one of life's most amazing mysteries and experiences. Is there one in particular that you'd like to read?
Well, Bite Me by Beth Ann Fennelly has some pretty great stuff, difficult stuff about birthing. There's some other wonderful poems in here, too. It's a hard thing to write about because it's such a mysterious experience. I think I'll read just part of this poem because it's pretty long. Bite Me. Beth Ann Fennelly lives in Mississippi, and she's got a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old. And I want to apologize to Beth Ann because I've made a couple edits in this poem so that I can read it on the radio. Daughter, when you were nearly here, when you were crowning, and your father could see your black hair and lifted in his trembling hands the scissors to cut your tie to me, when a nurse had gone to the waiting room to assure my mother just a few more pushes, when another had the heat lamp warming the bassinet beside my cot, then held up the mirror so I could see you sliding out, you started turning, wriggling, your elbows up. the mandala of your black hair turning and turning like a pinwheel, like laundry in the eye of the washer, like the eye of the storm that was just beginning and would finish me off forever. Because you did it. You got stuck, quite stuck. And so, they said, I'd have to push. Head, shoulders, elbows, out at once. And Lord, did I push. For 3 more hours, I pushed. I pushed so hard, blood vessels burst in my neck and in my chest. Pushed so hard, my anus turned inside out like a rosebud. Pushed so hard that for weeks to come, the whites of my eyes were red with blood, my face a boxer's, swollen and bruised. Though I wasn't thinking then about the weeks to come or anything at all besides pushing and dying. And your father was terror and blood splatter, like he, too, was being born. And he was. We were. And finally, I burst at the seams, and you were out. Look, ha, you didn't kill me after all. Monster, I have you, and you are mine now. Mine. And it is no great wonder that you bite me, because you were crowning and had to eat your way out of me, because you were crowning and developed a taste for my royal blood.
I love those lines. Monster, you are mine. I mean, it's just right there.
Yeah.
It sort of sums up these two sort of competing feelings.
Yeah. There's all this resentment and also this strange, you know, this is another person in the world. It's yours and it completely isn't yours. It's completely mysterious to you. It's a absolute miracle of living. I mean, I feel very privileged to have had it and have been able to experience it.
Now, there are also...
Not for everybody.
Yeah, right. Could you leave us with one last poem? And I was thinking of a very short poem by Maureen Owen called Bedtime.
Sure. Bedtime. I have this power. At night, I kiss 3 people. Minutes later, they are all sound asleep. The bizarre and the miraculous are the same thing.
Catherine Wagner teaches poetry at Miami University in Ohio. She is a co-editor of the anthology Not For Mothers Only.